Hi, I'm Steve Clemens, and I have a question. The United States prides itself on being the world's best startup nation, but can it stay that way? Let's get to the bottom line. America's legendary for its startups. Think of Google, Facebook, Uber, Amazon, Apple, Netflix. These all started small and skyrocketed to become household names all over the world. But is the startup ecosystem what it should be in the United States? Is there genius out there in America that's being ignored while the digital elites in the San Francisco Bay Area, New York, and Boston scarf up all the funding? If America is strong because of its entrepreneurs and microbusinesses, some of which can become huge, what's the state of the ecosystem that helps them grow? My guest today is literally one of the real founders of the Internet, at least as far as you and I are concerned, because he got us all online. He is Steve Case, who more than 30 years ago co-founded America Online, America's first major tech startup that transformed our relationship with the digital universe. And he's the founder of Revolution, which has invested nearly $1 billion in startups all over the country. He's the author of The Third Wave, An Entrepreneur's Vision of the Future, and coming this September, The Rise of the Rest, How Entrepreneurs in Surprising Places Are Building the New American Dream. Steve, it's great to be with you. Look, I've been on the big red bus, the rise of the red bus, in the heartland of America, going from city to city to city and meeting people that you have been asking to come forward and pitch to you their ideas. Give our audience what that's about. Why weren't you doing that in Cupertino or San Jose or Boston?
Well, Silicon Valley continues to be the pride of America, the envy of the world, as the most innovative ecosystem for the creation of new startups, and that will continue. But in our view, too much venture capital is focused on a few places like Silicon Valley and not enough on the rest of the country. Over the last decade, 75% of venture capital dollars in the United States have gone to just three states, California, New York, and Massachusetts. So the capital has gone to just a few places, but entrepreneurs are everywhere creating great ideas, new companies everywhere. So what we're trying to do really is sort of level the playing field. So if you have an idea, no matter where you live, you have a chance of starting that company and scaling that company, and the process creating jobs in that community and driving economic growth in that, you know, in that community. So it starts as an investment strategy to back the entrepreneurs of the future, building the industries of the future, and doing it all across the country. But it also ties in with some broader kind of impacts on communities, even a little bit in terms of policy and politics, because one of the challenges in the United States is this divide we now have, where some people are doing well, but a lot of people are feeling left out and left behind. We think we can address that in part by creating more companies all across the country that really are driving economic dynamism and helping build these communities.
Well, look, I think I've known you for close to 30 years. And when you got us all online, when America Online was vibrant and it was the pathway for people to experience the digital universe and just this transformed this planet, I guess my question is, I understood and sort of felt like you were one of the world's great entrepreneurs, and I saw so many other great entrepreneurs come along, and I felt that was vital to the American message. It was vital to the health of the American economy. And I have to say, I'm not sure that we've done all the things we need to do in America to create more Steve Cases, to create many more. We have a lot of them, as I just mentioned. But the question is, it's not just having a lot. The question is, given America's place in the world, is China beating us? Is India beating us? Are other nations out there looking at our experiment and saying, hey, we can do what they did? What are we getting right and what are we getting wrong by way of that entrepreneurship ecosystem?
It's a great way to frame it, because in many ways, America is still a startup nation. It started just 250 years ago as really an idea. It was a fragile nation, almost like a startup, almost didn't make it. But then finally got through and succeeded. In the last century has really been a pioneer in kind of driving the innovation, the agriculture revolution, then the industrial revolution, then more recently the digital revolution. So as a result, America is the leader of the free world, has the leading economy, and is viewed as the most innovative entrepreneurial nation. But other countries, as you say, have figured out that that's sort of the secret sauce that's sort of powered the American story, and are trying to do what they can to invest in technology, to invest in education, to invest in building startup communities so that these ideas can turn into companies and end up being quite successful. So I think we need to recognize that we can't rest on our laurels. We've had a pretty good run in this country, but we need to kind of lean into the future and need to recognize we've seen now the globalization of innovation and entrepreneurship. 25 years ago, over 90% of venture capital was in the United States. Now it's less than 50%, which really proves that it's globalizing. And then within the United States, we need to make sure we're backing entrepreneurs everywhere, not just in a few places on the coast. So it's a great opportunity, but I think it also could be framed as a challenge. If we only are backing entrepreneurs in a few places like Silicon Valley, we're probably not going to be building the industries of the future. We probably won't be creating jobs and driving economic growth everywhere, which will mean our country is more divided and our lead in the world will likely diminish.
When you go out and you kind of dig beneath the surface and say where these are, these new micro ventures that have come on, you can see that a lot of them are entrepreneurs of color, black and brown entrepreneurs, people who have come to the nation, immigrants that are taking risks. They're all over the country, like you said, right. And they're in pockets. And those places that have done these micro ventures turned out to be more economically nimble and resilient than places that don't have them. But when you sort of step back and talk to this town in Washington, D.C., or policymakers, they don't even have these folks on their radar screen. So what is the gap in the literacy and awareness of what it takes in the kind of entrepreneurship ecosystem that between the reality of the language and what these folks need versus what policymakers see on their dashboard?
I think it's improving a little bit. I got involved over a decade ago, was asked to co-chair something called the National Advisory Council on Innovation and Entrepreneurship, part of the Department of Commerce. We identified a number of priorities that led to launching an initiative at the White House called Startup America that I chair.
And was it fun and nimble, or was it Brezhnevian?
Well, you had to be patient, you had to be persistent, but we were able, as part of that, to kickstart a discussion around changing some laws around raising capital, which Jobs Act passed about 10 years ago, kind of in part based on some of those efforts. And I think the big insight that I had at the time, and now other people are now better understand, is that while small business is important and accounts for a lot of jobs, and big business, Fortune 500 companies are account for a lot of jobs, most new jobs are created by new companies mm-hmm. under 5 years. So startups, not just tech startups, but many forms of startups. So if we're not creating new startups, we're not going to really be able to kind of replenish some of the jobs that are going to be lost just based on the nature of how markets work and sort of some companies rise and some companies fall. The other data point that's interesting, every 25 years, about half of the Fortune 500 turns over. So again, you can't just rest on your laurels with assuming your big companies.
So see, half the Fortune 500 turns over means half the Fortune 500 disappears or falls, right?
So and usually because new companies emerge that surprise people and either disrupt existing industries or in some cases create new industries. That's a healthy process. You don't want to slow that down. You want to keep innovating and leaning into the future. But if we're only backing companies in a few places, and some of those innovations, some of those disruptions destroy jobs in other places, some manufacturing jobs or other kinds of things, and you're not investing in the entrepreneurs in those places, so they can create companies that can create jobs that will at least in part offset some of the job loss, you're going to wake up and find a situation where, as I said earlier, some people are doing well, a lot of people are not doing well, a lot of people are mad that they feel like they're being kind of left out of the economy. You have to be in a place like Silicon Valley to be relevant in the innovation economy, to raise capital and so forth. But the good news is that it started changing over the last decade. I think it will accelerate over the next decade, in part because of the pandemic, which has kind of created this unlock between how you work and how you live and where you work and where you live, more remote workers, people deciding to live in other places, still working for some company in some other place. And that also is unleashing more capital. Now, in the last decade, we've seen 1,400 new regional venture firms backing startups emerge. So it's starting to move away from being so dominated by the coast, but there's still a lot of work to be done. And that's what we've been trying to do initially with Startup America and more recently with our efforts around Rise of the Rest.
No, one of the things that you have really done a good job, and I think is you've kind of done it surreptitiously, is you've brought in Republicans and Democrats out of the policy space and kind of taught them or inculcated them with what the language is and why this is so important. So how have you, I just sort of want our audience to get an understanding of how you've been able, without controversy, to really bring these different people in there. And as you've done that, what does your gut tell you? Are you going to be able to get a bipartisan commitment to get the policy scaffolding right for this new form of entrepreneurship, rise of the rest.
Well, you're kind of, obviously, it's not just me. It's a broader group of people that are focused on these issues. Some of it is just building the relationships, which then builds goodwill and trust, which makes people more likely to listen to what you say. I think people hopefully really do believe I care about the country, care about trying to drive innovation, care about job creation. And the other aspect is we found, including on these bus tours we've done now, visiting over nearly 50 cities by bus and now investing through our various Rise of the Rest funds in 100 different cities, that the idea of backing the entrepreneurs, creating the companies of the future and creating jobs in those communities is a bipartisan issue. When we're on that bus or in our various meetings, if I hadn't read my briefing documents, I wouldn't know who's a Democrat, who's a Republican. Mm. They're all joining together to celebrate what's happening in these cities, to celebrate the entrepreneurs that are building these companies and taking risks, to identify ways to kind of lift up those communities and take them to the next level. So it helps that it's such a bipartisan issue. And I worked 10 years ago on the Jobs Act, working with President Obama and also with Eric Cantor, who was on the House side, and really went back and forth to try to make sure we were building bridges between Republicans and Democrats, and ultimately came together with a broad bipartisan bill support. In terms of your question of what's next, right now as we're talking is a conference effort underway to take some bills that had passed in the House and passed in the Senate, initially called Endless Frontier, and then one called USICA, and then one called the COMPETES Act, which deals with things like semiconductors, investment in R&D and other things, but also has as part of it funding for regional hubs so that we can accelerate. And pick some cities to make a bigger investment in, because some of these cities that now are these innovation powerhouses like a Silicon Valley or even in Austin were in part made that because of government funding in certain technologies and certain decades ago.
Who's getting it right? Who's getting it wrong?
Well, the great thing on this is dozens of cities are getting it right. People ask me, so what's the next Silicon Valley? Are there going to be one or two cities that are really going to rise up? And we've now seen this in dozens of cities. I'll give you some examples. When we were in Chattanooga, they made a big investment.
Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Wow. A big investment in fiber. So 10 years ago, the mayor led an effort to do that. And a bunch of companies have come out of that, including one we backed called FreightWaves, which does a platform, almost like a Bloomberg data platform, for the trucking and logistics industry. Mm. I didn't know this till we were there, but most of the big trucking companies in the United States are headquartered in Chattanooga. So if you're building a platform for them, it's better to be there, understand their needs. We backed a company in Chicago called Tempus. It's doing some really innovative things around health tech with big data and diagnosing cancer and things like that. We backed a company in Eastern Kentucky that's created hundreds of jobs around ag tech, a kind of a indoor kind of controlled agriculture
Eastern Kentucky is
Eastern Appalachia, coal country where for decades people saw a job loss, saw very little reason to be hopeful. A company like AppHarvest gives them a hope. So we're seeing this everywhere. Another great city is Indianapolis. There's a company called Exact Target. It was acquired by Salesforce probably 6-7 years ago. Now Salesforce has 2,000 employees in Indianapolis, second largest city for Salesforce outside of San Francisco itself. And the founder of Exact Target has gone on to start and launch a bunch of companies. Now there's a couple of dozen companies in the enterprise software space that are bubbling there. Or in Atlanta, a company called MailChimp was recently acquired for $12 billion. Most people didn't think a tech company could be that successful in a place like MailChimp. My point is there are hundreds and hundreds of companies and dozens of cities where things are percolating. And the reason I decided to write the book is that their story had to be told. The story of these entrepreneurs, the story of these cities, the stories of the industries being built. So
I feel like I'm an alum of the Rise of the Rest family because I rode around on that big bus with you.
I remember.
And we went to St. Louis, we went to Madison, we went to places in Iowa. I mean, tell our audience what that's about. Being on the bus is actually being on the bus with a lot of crazy people into startups.
Well, we decided, now 8 years ago, to hit the road, not just talk about this from a policy standpoint, but really hit the road and see for ourselves what was happening. We hoped that we might inspire some people in some communities to focus more on startups. We hoped we might get some people who weren't paying attention to some of these cities to start paying more attention. We hoped we'd get some of the coastal venture capitalists to start looking at companies in other places. And we hoped we could serve as sort of a convener, bringing people together. And part of the reason we use the bus, other than it's a good visual, is a convening platform. Mm. As you saw, we bring together all kinds of people, the entrepreneurs, the big companies, the university presidents, Democrats, Republicans, senators, governors, what have you, to join us and see for themselves what's happening in these different cities.
And one of the areas I just wonder about, just knowing how America was for centuries the world's brain drain problem, that the world's smartest people would come here, throw in their lot, try and innovate, you know, build companies and businesses, raise their families here, get educated in American universities. Have we gotten anything wrong in our immigration policies when it comes to the startups and the Jobs Act and the kinds of things you've been trying to do?
No, of course. And I testified in the Senate, I think, 9 years ago for immigration reform, so we can continue to win what is now a global battle for talent, as you mentioned.
Are we winning it?
We are still winning it, but only barely. 10, 20 years ago, we were winning it rather convincingly. So we've lost our lead in terms of being that magnet. It is harder to come to this country, it's harder to stay in this country, and therefore some entrepreneurs are choosing to be in other places. So we do need to address that. Hopefully immigration reform will happen in the relatively near future.
You know, I've kind of met Jack Ma of Alibaba a few times and wondered whether that was China's Steve Case, and whether or not with what Jack has been able to do is, you know, build a lot of wealth, build a lot of innovative companies, whether or not in the end, you know, he's now being, you know, highly regulated and confined and controlled to some degree by Chinese regulators, whether or not China was going to become a peer competitor to the United States in the entrepreneurship ecosystem. You know, why don't you handicap China's chances on that for us?
China's on the move. You know, people 10, 20 years ago thought China was pretty good at replicating things, manufacturing things, but not necessarily good at inventing and, you know, on the innovation side. But that's changed dramatically. And so they're definitely on the move. The investments they made in technologies, AI, robotics, other technologies, some think they actually are in the lead. Hopefully that's not the case, but that is a growing concern, which is, I think, a reminder, hopefully a wake-up call, that America needs to step up if we're going to remain the most innovative entrepreneurial nation in the world. And we need to do, the only way to do that is to do it if we're more inclusive and bringing more people, more places along, and understanding that some of the exciting industries of the future are going to be reimagining healthcare, reimagining agriculture, reimagining a lot of different things. And the expertise in those sectors and the partnerships you need in those sectors often are in different parts of the country. Healthcare, for example, some of the most important in the United States, some of the most important research institutions are Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, mm-hmm. or the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio, or MD Anderson in Texas, or Johns Hopkins in Maryland. Those are some of the people you want to partner with. Some of the most important healthcare companies are companies like United Health in Minnesota. There's a number of healthcare companies in Nashville, Tennessee. So if you want to innovate in those sectors, you're going to need partnerships because it requires sort of a systems-level integration. It's not like an app in the App Store. It's a much more complicated, multifaceted problem. You can't do it alone. You need those partnerships. And many of the partnerships you'll need are with organizations, companies in the middle of the country, which will advantage these rising cities if we pay more attention to what's happening in those cities, if we back more companies with venture capital in those cities, if we can reverse what's been a brain drain in many parts of the country where people left because they didn't see much happening there. They didn't feel like they could, you know, be an entrepreneur, you know, start a company unless they moved to a place like Silicon Valley. How do we slow that brain drain and create a boomerang so more people are returning? And we have seen a good bit of that in the last couple of years because of the pandemic. Hopefully that is a tipping point, and the next decade we'll see a much more inclusive innovation economy, and that will enable more parts of the country to really benefit from the job creation aspects of entrepreneurship, and also and maximize the likelihood America can, as it heads towards its 250th birthday, remain that innovative leader in the world.
Is there a way so that that innovation and the benefits of it get more widely spread in a community?
Well, it's partly launching more companies that do in themselves create jobs. There are many companies now that didn't exist 20 years ago that have right. tens of thousands of jobs, sometimes even hundreds of thousands of jobs. Amazon, that didn't exist 30 years ago, has, I think, now nearly 2 million jobs. So that's part of it. But then recognizing this broader spill-off impact, it's not just the jobs within those companies. It's the jobs in those communities that support a growing population as opposed to a declining population. So and we obviously need to do a better job in this country and many other countries around education to create more people that are ready for the economy of the future. And it's not just about coding. It's about creativity and communication skills, a lot of other things that are quite important. But first and foremost, it's about making sure that we really are backing entrepreneurs everywhere so we can maintain our lead in this country. And we can, hopefully, at least in a small way, help knit together a very divided nation, where I think the Pew Research from a few years ago said that most people, I think it was 70% of people, wake up in the morning anxious about the future, worried about the future. How do we give them a sense of hope and optimism? And job creation is a key part of it. It's not, obviously not the only part of it, but it's a key part of it. And given startups are the biggest job creators, let's focus more on startups and not just in San Francisco and New York and Boston, but in dozens and dozens of cities all across the country.
I learned from you, and one of the sad things I learned from you about the digital startup story in America, about, you know, Boston and New York and San Francisco Bay Area, was it was a white guy-owned sector. And when you gave me the data that showed me how few women entrepreneurs were receiving capital, how few black and brown entrepreneurs were doing this, and then that's before you get to the geographic bias out there. You know, are you seeing in your gut, as you look at any transformation of who's getting the money, and are you seeing a inclusion, you know, a more diverse pool of talent out there?
It is getting better. The data is sort of shocking that women are 50% of the country, they get less than 10% of venture capital. Black Americans are 13% of the country, they get less than 1% of venture capital. So it's not just, as you say, about places like, you know, California, New York, and Massachusetts. It's also about people. So we really need to level the playing field more broadly. The good news there is these cities that we're backing through Rise Rest tend to be more diverse. And we are finding some of the best entrepreneurs are, you know, the entrepreneurs who historically were not able to raise venture capital. So about, I think it's now 43% of the businesses we've invested in through Rise the Rest are either female founders or founders of color. One of the companies we backed a couple years ago is a seed company called Reaply, just raised a $20 million financing of a black founder doing some really interesting things related to sustainability. So there are signs of hope, but we need to do a much better job of being inclusive, not just in terms of place, but also in terms of people.
Now, last question, you've been appointed chair of the National Advisory Council on Innovation and Entrepreneurship. This is within the realm of the Department of Commerce, and Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo paid tribute to all that you know about the startup ecosystem. What is your task? What are you going to do? And how do you know if you won?
Well, Secretary Raimondo actually was a venture capitalist 25 years ago. So when she was governor of Rhode Island, we had some discussions about the ecosystems there. And when she moved to Washington, D.C. to become the Secretary of Commerce, asked for some some of my thoughts on areas to focus in. And one of them was regional hubs. Another was to restart this National Advisory Council on Innovation and Entrepreneurship, which I had chaired more than a decade ago. So she agreed to do that and then asked me to co-chair it again, and I'm delighted to do it and look forward to working with the secretary and a great group of people to identify what some of the priorities should be that from a policy standpoint so that we can take the next step beyond some of the work a decade ago, things like the Jobs Act, and make sure we are ushering in this more inclusive innovation economy, and we are doing everything we possibly can to make sure that America remains the most innovative entrepreneurial nation in the world.
Steve Case, co-founder of America Online, founder of the investment firm Revolution, newly appointed chair of the National Advisory Council on Innovation and Entrepreneurship for the U.S. government, and author of the upcoming book, The Rise of the Rest, How Entrepreneurs in Surprising Places Are Building the New American Dream. You're busy. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Steve.
So what's the bottom line? America was the world's first startup nation. Centuries ago, it was a combo of European colonies, French and British and Spanish, populated by risk takers who wanted to break free of the confines back home. Of course, sadly, genocide and slavery, well, they're part of that American history. But the idea that America is a place where risks are taken, ideas are launched, fortunes are built, all that disrupted the old order. America became the world's brain drain problem because so many of the greatest minds in the world came here as immigrants. But recently, things have changed. A lot of immigration is now blocked. Risk-taking has become harder. Investors focus on some parts of the country and just ignore innovative genius in other parts. So the issues my guest is focused on are not trivial. It's about the ability of the United States to reinvent itself and its economy as the home of innovation, or else let other countries take the lead. And that's the bottom line.